All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today is September 2nd, 2025. I had to do a double take for a second there. Remember, it was Tuesday because of the long weekend. Hope you guys all had a fantastic Labor Day, those of you who are stateside. And for everybody else, well, you're probably not too surprised to see what's going on this morning, but the bond market is throwing a fit. More specifically, the long end, the long end of the yield curves, the long duration bonds, they are way down this morning. The yields are higher. What the heck is going on? Why would long interest rates in the US, in the UK, in France, in Germany, the Netherlands, in Japan, everybody, long-term interest rates are going up? Well, because we all have a spending problem and none of us are doing anything about it. And the bond investors are throwing a fit. First things first, we've got interest rates on the 30-year yield in the United States this morning, the highest since 2007. Interest rates on the 30-year gilt in the UK, they're the highest they've been since 1998. And the French 30-year bond is the highest it's been since 2009. So we've got like multi-decade highs across the board here. Look, in the United States, we had the story broke late last week that an appeals court had struck down President Trump's tariffs. They said, no, the president doesn't have the authority to unilaterally jack up the prices by 50 to 145% on things coming from China, everywhere else, based on some obscure emergency powers that were granted to the president years ago. Hey, you know what? There's a perfectly legitimate legal case to be made for that. It ain't going to happen at the federal appeals court level, though. It's going to the Supreme Court one way or another. We all kind of knew this. But look, that had the bond market saying, well, gosh, guys, you know, President Trump has been in the press bragging about how much money the tariffs have brought in for the country, which is kind of a weird flex because let's remember, a lot of those are going to be passed on to us. This is the largest tax increase in U.S. history. I think a lot of people are losing sight of that, but I digress. What happens to the bond market if, say, the Supreme Court sides with the appeals court and decides to strike down the tariffs? Well, that means you got to pay all that money back. Well, Christ, where's that money going to come from? If you said the bond market, you are paying attention, which means the government would have to borrow that money to pay back the tariffs that they bragged about collecting. Well, the bond market would not like that. Now, I don't know that that's going to happen. There's a very good chance the 6-3 conservative majority Supreme Court decides to say, sure, the president can unilaterally decide to do this because reasons. And I'm sure we all won't live to regret that the second some radical leftist gets into the White House one day. Again, imagining what the other side does with the powers you're so eager to grant your side, that's, I think, a little bit of a lack of imagination on the part of a lot of Americans, but I digress once again. Now, over in the UK, you've got something similar going on with their Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rachel Reeves, is struggling to get any kind of balance to their budget going on. Earlier this year, the UK bond market threw a fit when their attempt at welfare reform failed. And now they're like, well, if we can't cut our spending and our entitlement programs, I guess we're going to have to raise taxes. But the UK has a problem because they have been bleeding wealth all year. Millionaires and billionaires are fleeing that country almost as fast as migrants can flee into it. And I'm sure if you extrapolate that over the course of years and years and years, life is just going to be wonderful in the United Kingdom years from now. So that's going on in the UK. And then the French, their government is falling apart over spending reforms and tax increases, where the prime minister has basically called for a confidence vote that's supposed to happen this week. That's the second time in a year that the French government has nearly fallen apart over disagreements over spending problems. The Europeans as a whole decided we're going to get rid of our debt breaks, which is like they call it a break over there. We call it the debt ceiling here. It's a debt break over there. Anyways, they tore that up and threw it out because President Trump and Vice President Vance had a not-so-nice meeting with Zelensky from Ukraine, and Europeans decided we're on our own against the Russians, so we better spend a whole bunch of money on our military. Oh, but we don't have money. That's not a problem. We'll just borrow and print it into existence. And ever since that happened, interest rates have been going higher because of that. And then, of course, in the United States, we had our big Doge fiasco, which was really just a dog and pony show. They never cut any real spending. What was it? $9 billion, enough to fund the government for like 45 seconds, was cut because of Doge. And then we passed the one big, beautiful bill, trillions of dollars of spending and borrowing. You know, now the bond vigilantes are back and they're saying, if the governments are going to do all this irresponsible crap, I am not going to loan my money to the government for 30 years in exchange for nothing point nothing percent. I want a higher interest rate because I know inflation is going to come back because of what you're doing. And that is driving the bond markets across the board, across the world, across the globe this morning. That's got stocks heading lower because higher interest rates generally bad for the economy. And look, you might be sitting there saying, but my Fed rate cuts, don't worry, the Fed's going to cut in September, and therefore this whole discussion is bunk. Guys, it doesn't work that way. Case in point, the Europeans have been cutting rates for years. And is that stopping European interest rates from going higher? No, it is not. What happened in the United States the last time we cut rates? Interest rates went higher. If you're sitting there saying Fed rate cuts is this magic pixie dust that we sprinkle over any economic problem and it just goes away, and then Tom Lee's like, whatever, buy Ethereum and everything goes higher. It just doesn't work that way, guys. At some point, we got to address the elephant in the room. We all spend way too much freaking money. We're trying to borrow more money than literally exists. At some point, we've got to stop. But today is not that day. And so stocks are down and bond yields are higher. And you know what else is higher? Gold and silver are sharply higher this morning because all that stuff I just talked about is rocket fuel for precious metals. If you think interest rates should be higher because inflation is going to come back and the bonds don't yield enough money to compensate you for inflation, then the only logical choice is to buy gold and by extension silver. And that is exactly what people are doing this morning. Spot silver is over $40. The front month silver contract over $41. Spot gold is pushing 3,500. The front month gold contract is above 3,500, another all-time high. Metals are ripping here. Now, pay attention in metals because I'm starting to see that exchange for physical premium widen again. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not really sure what's going on there. I don't think this is a tariff thing. Remember, we watched the London price was going a lot lower, the New York price was rising faster than the London price. We're seeing that again this morning. Now, historically, or at least in the beginning of this year, that was because we all thought tariffs were going to apply to gold and silver. And that was the explanation for that. And then when we ruled that out, we saw that premium slam shut. The New York and London prices came closer together. But we're seeing that spread again here. We're seeing that widen. The price in London is not rising as fast as the price in New York. I'll be honest with you guys, it's got me scratching my head this morning. I don't know what's going on there. Maybe it's time to have Bob Coleman back on the channel and have him try to explain that. But keep an eye on what's going on in London. I don't know what it is, but it's just not sitting right with me, guys. Also going on this morning, we've got President Trump could declare a national housing emergency. What does that mean? It means pretty much nothing other than the fact that Trump's people are worried that they're losing young voters because they haven't done anything to address the unaffordability of housing. And here's a hint. If you want housing to be more affordable, let houses become more affordable. Let the prices go down. Stop with the stupid rate cuts. Stop with the easy money and the FHA programs and the loan workouts and all the other things that is just, you know, fancy speak for pumping more easy money into the housing market. Those prices want to come down if you just let them. But no, why do that when you could just like declare a national emergency and pump more easy money into housing and accidentally make housing even more expensive while you do that? Guys, the solution is simple. Much like spending less money at the government, we need to let home prices go lower. It really is that simple. And if the government lets it, it will happen. But instead, they're declaring national emergencies and appointing ad hoc working groups and committees to explore the possibility of maybe one day doing something. None of them want home prices to come down. That's the funny thing. It's not so funny if you're a millennial and you've been priced out of the dream of American home ownership. But that's really what we need to let happen, and it's just not going to happen. We've also got China and Russia are building a new gas pipeline, what could become the most capital-intensive natural gas project in the world, pumping gas across the vast deserts between Russia and China. They're having this big meeting over there. They're all playing nice, and you know, Vladimir Putin was holding hands with Narendra Modi, and I think the two kind of exchanged a wink. You know, sparks flew, emotions ran high. It was actually very heated event over there. But look, the stick of tariffs was meant to bring the Indians into the Western fold away from Russia and China. And it looks like that is backfiring right now because the Indians are cozying up to the Russians and the Chinese. So maybe lumping the Ukrainian war in with the goals you were trying to accomplish with the tariffs and the trade war probably was a bridge too far for the Trump administration. And in the latest chapter of dirtbag CEOs, oh, this is just great. We have had it. 2025 has been such a wonderful year for dirtbag CEOs. Obviously, it all started with the Coldplay concert. We all remember that fiasco. Then we had this guy, the CEO of Dogbrook. It's a paving company in Poland. Basically yanked a tennis star's hat out of the hands of a little boy and stuffed it in his wife's shopping bag. And then when he got called out on it, it was basically like, well, the kid should have been faster or something like that. Like, bro, you literally like ripped a item of sports memorabilia out of the hands of a child for your own selfish reasons. And oh, well, that company's down 15%. And then the latest one, Nestle CEO has been fired. It's the second CEO to be fired in a year at Nestle because he had an affair with a subordinate. And, you know, guys, it's not such a stretch. If you'll cheat on your wife or you cheat on your spouse, you probably cheat on your business partners. So, yeah, these people should be fired for doing these things. This just in, CEOs are scumbags. More news at 11. We've got an Iowa nuclear plant could be restarting. Why? Because of data centers, of course. The Klarna IPO is back. Buy now, IPO later, apparently. Kraft Heinz is splitting up, and for some reason, everybody cares this morning. I found that story very uninteresting. And McDonald's value meals are making a comeback once again. Oh, it's one of those mornings, guys. How about we shrink my big melon of a head, and let's see what's going on in the world of finance this morning. Just look at that S&P 500. Oh, wait, before I do that, you, like button, subscribe, all that good stuff, the YouTube stuff. Okay, moving on. Have your coffee with us tomorrow, please. The S&P 500 is lower by 70 points, 1.08% to the downside. This is that ruction or the ruckus in the bond market is driving stocks lower this morning, continuing the sell-off from late last week following NVIDIA's earnings. And the Dow is joining in, now down 400 points ahead of the opening bell, 0.88% lower. Not looking so good for the Dow. The NASDAQ, though, is the worst of the three, leading the way lower, 1.45% lower, down by 338 points. Big sell-off in tech this morning. Looking over at the U.S. dollar, now we kind of see why the sell-off is happening in tech. We got a much stronger dollar this morning, 72 basis points higher, about 0.75%. Are we heading towards a liquidity event here, guys? I mean, the reverse repo is down to almost nothing here. I don't know. Pay attention, man. The bond market is far more important than the stock market. And right now, the dollar is becoming more scarce. And so it is higher this morning. And of course, looking at the yield curve, we've got yields are higher on the long end of the yield curve. They're off the highs of the morning, but still pretty high here. The 30-year treasury is at 4.973. That's up 5.5 points. The 10 years at 4.273, up almost 3 points. The 2 year is up 4 points and change at 3.666. And the 1 month is actually down a fraction of a point here, 4.315. We'll be back to some of these bond charts in just a second. But first, let's check in with the commodities board. And this has kind of got me scratching my head a little bit this morning. We've got spot gold here, XAU USD. That is at 34.83. It's a fantastic number. It's up $6.42. Gold had a good day yesterday, but it's only up 0.18% this morning. Now look at that front month gold futures for December delivery on the COMEX. That's at 35.47. All right, we're higher by about 70 bucks here. Now that's up $31 compared to spot only being up six or 0.88% higher. So the price of gold in New York is rising faster than the price of gold in London. By the way, the price of gold in New York, that's the price of gold in December in New York, is rising a hell of a lot faster than the price of gold in London now. We've got the same thing happening in silver. Spot silver is actually showing in the red here. Now it's higher than it was Friday, the last time we talked. Metals were trading yesterday while the U.S. had Labor Day. But right now, spot silver is down 38 cents, $40.35. That's off by almost 1%, 0.94% lower. But then that December silver contract, all right, in New York, $41.20. That's higher by 48 cents after rising yesterday, or 1.2%. So something's up here, guys. The price in New York in December rising, the price in London now, not so much. All right, well, let's just digest that, and then we'll talk about some of the other commodities here. Gold holds close to record as demand for precious metal surges. This one is in Bloomberg this morning. Gold held just below a record high, and silver traded above $40 an ounce as the prospect of Federal Reserve rate cuts and growing concerns over the central bank's future gave fresh legs to the multi-year rally in precious metals. The latest run has been underpinned by expectations that the U.S. Central Bank will reduce interest rates this month after Fed Chair Jerome Powell cautiously opened the door to a reduction. A key U.S. jobs report on Friday is likely to add signs of an increasingly subdued labor market, supporting the case for cuts. That's boosted the allure of precious metals, which do not pay holders interest. With technical resistance levels breached, we may well see momentum taking gold to a new all-time high this week, said BMO Capital Market analyst Helen Amos and George Heppel in a note, with holdings in gold-backed ETFs last week expanding the most since April. The analysts see another week of net inflows on the cards and potential for non-commercial futures positioning to lengthen. Now, guys, that mention of ETFs holdings increasing the most since April, I suspect ETF holdings may be playing something of a role in that deviation we're seeing between New York and London. I can't explain exactly the mechanism for that, to be honest with you, but that's one thing that's changing. Most of those ETFs hold most of their metal in those London vaults, and so perhaps there's worries about liquidity in London. Why would that be leading to lower prices in London? I just couldn't explain that to you guys, but something is off between London and New York and the precious metals market, and I suspect the ETFs are playing a role there. Both gold and silver have more than doubled over the past 3 years, with mounting risks in the spheres of geopolitics, the economy, and global trade driving increased demand for the time-honored haven assets. An escalation in U.S. President Donald Trump's assault against the Fed this year has become the latest cause for investor alarm, with concerns over the central bank's independence threatening to erode confidence in the U.S. And I do think the Fed and the worries of Fed independence is playing a role in this gold and silver story. You could see it on Friday. As things got worse and worse for Lisa Cook over the course of the day on Friday, we were watching gold and silver rise in tandem with that story. All right, so that's the metals. Let's touch some other commodities here. We've got copper is down, basically unchanged here, 0.61% lower for copper. Platinum is up 1.6%. Palladium is up 0.7%. And crude oil is up 1.8%, $65.16 for October WTI futures. That's higher by more than a dollar this morning. We have also got Bitcoin looking a little bit better here, $109,289. We spent most of the weekend at $108,000. We were over $110,000 briefly this morning. Bitcoin still kind of consolidating at this level here. Pay attention, guys. Bitcoin winter, typically 75 to 77 weeks following a halving event, or was it 45 to 47? About 18 months after the halving is typically when crypto winter sets in, and that's, well, the end of this month. So Bitcoin, this rally in Bitcoin, probably running out of steam here. Does it have one more leg left? That's the big question. All right, now here's the big one this morning. U.S., U.K., and French budget woes combined to trigger worldwide bond market rout, and we can add sell-off in stocks to that list as well. Surging long-term government bond yields are causing consternation across financial markets on Tuesday. A trifecta of separate themes are converging to focus investors on the rising cost of government debt amid unsustainable budget deficits. Last week, the crisis was the sell-off in French bonds called OATS after a confidence vote on the government was called for September 8th, prompting a sharp fall in the CAC 40. The spillover from this volatility has triggered similar declines in German and Dutch government bonds, now also trading with yields at 14-year highs. This week, the alarm bells are ringing in the UK as 30-year bonds known as gilts continue their inexorable decline as the Labour government tries to plug a £20 billion to £25 billion fiscal hole during its upcoming autumn budget. Meanwhile, the 30-year yields have moved back toward 5%. That's in the U.S., as courts declare trade tariffs illegal, calling into question the hundreds of billions of dollars of revenue generated since their imposition in April. Deutsche Bank's head of macro and thematic research, Jim Reed, summarized the predicament in which the UK government finds itself as a slow-moving, vicious cycle. Rising debt concerns push yields higher, worsening debt dynamics, which in turn pushes yields higher again. Well, that sounds like a debt death spiral, doesn't it? And well, the U.S. has the same problem. It's just particularly magnified in the U.K. right now. Let's look at some of these charts here, guys. And here's the point. You know, we're going all the way back to the start of 2022, right around the time the Fed started their quantitative tightening and their rate hike cycle. And look, long-term interest rates have done pretty much nothing but go up here. This is the U.S. 30-year yield. It's currently 4.964, flirting with that 5% level. Not quite the highs we saw in October of 2023. But one thing I want to point out, guys, and all you Fed watchers out there, remember the last time the Federal Reserve started cutting interest rates? That was in September, right here. That's when the Fed started cutting rates. Did that rate cut lower interest rates? No, it clearly did not, because they're higher now. And so if you guys are sitting there saying, don't worry, when the Fed cuts, all these problems are going to go away, it really doesn't work that way. It sure as heck isn't going to work that way for mortgages or car loans, which are more tied to the long end of the yield curve than they are the overnight rate at the Fed. The French have the same problem. Look at the French 30-year OAT, I guess that's what we're calling the French bond, starting back in 2022 when the Fed started their tightening cycle. Now the highest they have been since, 2009 for the French at 4.503%. And the British are in worse shape than everybody. They actually have the highest out of all the developed countries, 5.694% for the 30-year UK gilt. And again, that all started in 2022. Guys, in 2022, after the failure of transitory, in my opinion, that started a new 40 to 50-year cycle of higher interest rates and higher inflation. Get used to higher rates. No matter what they do, if they try to print money or if they try to lower interest rates, they're going to bring the inflation back, and that's going to push those long-term interest rates even higher until the fiscal mess in the capitals of these countries is sorted. Long-term interest rates are going to keep grinding higher. And I would also point out, at the end of 2022, in October, that was the UK gilt crisis when the UK pension system almost collapsed, and we are considerably higher than we were back then. Problems keep getting worse in the UK. And hey, let's throw the Japanese in while we're at it, because they're coming to the end of their experiment in modern monetary theory, and the long-term JGBs, the 30-year Japanese government bond, is at 3.211%. That has done nothing but go higher since 2022. Now, the magnitude of the move is different depending on which country you look at. And there have been these specific things for some of these countries, like the UK gilt crisis was unique to the UK. But all of these countries have the same thing in common. Since 2022, long-term borrowing costs have moved sharply higher and continue to do so despite all this dovish talk from central banks. And speaking of dovish talk, let's throw some more out here. Trump waves declaring a national housing emergency. That is according to Secretary Bessent. And honestly, I don't know what they can do here other than try to pump more easy money into the housing market, which, of course, will only make things worse. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said the Trump administration may declare a national housing emergency this fall as the White House looks to highlight key issues for midterm campaign voters. We're trying to figure out what we can do, and we don't want to step into the business of states, counties, and municipal governments, Bessent told Washington Examiner. We may declare a national housing emergency in the fall. Bessent said housing affordability would be a critical leg of Republicans' 2026 midterm election platform. Bessent declined to list any specific actions the president may take, but he suggested that administration officials are directly studying ways to standardize local building and zoning codes and decrease closing costs. So right after saying he doesn't want to get involved in the local stuff, he goes on to say we're going to get involved in the local stuff, standardizing building codes, obviously trying to spur home construction as a way to solve home affordability. We've heard that before. And also decrease closing costs. I don't know how you're going to do that unless you're going to go try to cap fees or go after the money the lawyers and the realtors are making. It's probably not going to make you any friends, though, doing that. In other words, there's not a lot they can do to lower housing prices other than stop with the easy money. But you see what they're doing with the Federal Reserve and trying to stack the FOMC with dovish puppets. That's only going to make the housing problem worse. Meanwhile, Russia and China signed a major deal for a new gas pipeline. This one just hit this morning. There's stories are starting to trickle out from this India-China-Russia meeting, and it looks like the Iranians and the North Koreans are along for the ride also this morning. Russia's Gazprom said it signed a legally binding agreement to build a long-anticipated Power of Siberia 2 gas pipeline to China via Mongolia and would expand deliveries through other routes in what will be seen by the Kremlin as a major political win. In comments made to Russian wires from Beijing, CEO Alexei Miller said the gas producer could ship as much as 50 billion cubic meters a year via the Power of Siberia 2 for 30 years. Miller said the price for the fuel will be lower than what Gazprom currently charges customers in Europe, according to the reports. Beijing has yet to confirm the details of Miller's pronouncement. China's state-owned Xinhua news agency reported on bilateral meetings but did not specifically mention the pipeline, though it reported that the two countries signed more than 20 cooperation agreements, including in the field of energy. Discussions around the mega project have stalled for years, while Russia has been eager to advance it in order to compensate for lower European deliveries following the invasion of Ukraine. And the European Union is now considering an outright ban by the end of 2027. China has been far more cautious. Gas demand growth has been slowing, and Beijing is wary of excessive dependence on a single supplier. It's also worth pointing out that this project doesn't make a lot of sense. There is a point where pumping natural gas so far becomes less and less economical, and it actually becomes cheaper to liquefy it and put it on a boat and sail it around the world, because those long gas pipelines need a lot of pumping energy. It's very expensive. I mean, you're talking about pumping natural gas through Mongolia and then across some of the biggest deserts in the world to be able to reach the Chinese population centers. The economics of a project like that are questionable at best. But that's going on this morning. Meanwhile, Nestle plunges into turmoil as the CEO is fired over an undisclosed relationship. Look, I don't want to talk too much about this. There's that scumbag there. This is just another example of these guys are just freaking dirtbags. And again, if you'll cheat on your wife, you'll cheat on your business partner. So, you know, it makes sense to fire a guy like this. You had that guy at the tennis match stealing the hat from the little boy. You had that thing with the CEO at the Coldplay concert. There's just too much of this crap. People are just so awful to one another. And, well, it's affecting Nestle because this is now Nestle's second CEO fired in the last calendar year. And that stock is down 0.85% today. Hey, case in point, like board and directors, since you guys obviously don't care about these people being scumbags when you appoint them, it's worth pointing out that these people are now costing you money. Your stock is going down when their scumbaggery and dirtbaggery is exposed. So maybe just don't appoint these scumbags to begin with and do your shareholders a favor. I just throw it out there and you guys do what you want with it. Meanwhile, we've got another nuclear AI story, this time in Iowa. An Iowa nuclear plant is the next contender to restart, spurred by AI data center demand. This time we're talking about the recently closed Duane Arnold plant. The Duane Arnold nuclear plant northwest of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, is pressing ahead with plans to restart operations by the end of the decade after shutting down for economic reasons in 2020. The plant is the third and likely the last mothballed reactor in the U.S. that is in shape to come back online to support growing electricity demand in the U.S. Duane Arnold would follow similar restarts planned for the Palisades nuclear plant in Michigan and Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania, which plan to resume operations later this year and in 2027, respectively, subject to approval by the NRC, of course. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, approved a request last week from NextEra Energy, Duane Arnold's owner, to let the nuclear plant reconnect to the electrical grid. NextEra sees Duane Arnold restarting operations by the fourth quarter of 2028 at the earliest, according to FERC filings. So FERC, they regulate the electrical end of the power grid, and so Duane Arnold has gotten approval from FERC to start putting power back on the grid, but ultimately the decision lies with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. There's still a lot of work needs to be done at this plant before this can be brought back online, but this is the third nuclear restart to hear about in the last 2 years. Once again, guys, power remains the single biggest limitation, that and accounting fraud, of course, with this AI bubble. We're already starting to see power bills double in some parts of the country. Honestly, I think a lot of people are in for some gas and electric bill shock this winter. Let's see what this AI bubble looks like, and let's see what public opinion looks like around the whole AI industry after people get their utility bills in February and March. And we'll see if that doesn't change the attitude of investors towards this AI mania. Meanwhile, Klarna and backers seek $1.27 billion in a U.S. IPO after the tariff pause. It seems that IPO is back on the table for the buy now, pay later lender. Klarna Group and some of its shareholders are seeking to raise as much as $1.27 billion as the financial technology company revives a New York initial public offering that was delayed earlier this year amid market volatility. The company and some of its backers are offering 34.3 million shares for $35 to $37 apiece, according to a filing on Tuesday with the U.S. SEC. At the top of the range, the company would have a market value of about $14 billion based on the outstanding shares listed in the filing. Klarna plans to sell 5.6 million shares in the offering, and selling holders, including executives, entities related to Sequoia Capital and Heartland, are set to offer 28.8 million shares. Klarna filed publicly for its IPO with the U.S. SEC in March, but paused its plans as U.S. President Trump's trade war shook markets in April. Other fintech firms that delayed IPOs have since gone ahead with them, including eToro and Chime Financial. And I would point out, guys, that the window for this IPO is rapidly slamming shut. They only have a few months to get this done because the job market continues to get worse and the bond market liquidity concerns are starting to creep up. Klarna is dependent on both of those things. People have to have jobs in order to pay back the loans, and there needs to be liquidity in the bond market in order for Klarna to securitize that debt and sell it to probably your pension fund. Both of those issues are probably going to get worse in the short term. So Klarna needs to push this thing through, and they need to do it fast. We got this story going on this morning. I'll be honest with you. This is like front page news on all the financial outlets. I don't really care. Do you guys care that Kraft Heinz is going to separate into two publicly traded companies? I don't know. It doesn't. Okay, my ketchup and Oscar Mayer wieners are going to be made by two different companies. This is earth-shattering news. I don't know why everybody is so big on this one. Kraft Heinz merged about 10 years ago, and I guess it was a bad idea. Now they're going to split off into two companies. The ketchup and the mac and cheese is going to go one way, and Oscar Mayer wieners are going to go the other way. They're still going to be friends. That's the story. I'm not going to read any more into this. And last but not least, McDonald's to expand the value menu with discounted combo meals. I'm not going to go into too much detail here because we've telegraphed this story quite a few times. This has come up a number of times in the last couple of months. This is a sign of the consumer is hurting. McDonald's is doubling down on trying to bring low-income consumers back to their restaurants. People could not afford to eat at McDonald's. What stage, right? It's been the best economy ever, and that's why people can't afford McDonald's anymore. I mean, we're finally starting to admit, mostly because now there's a Republican in the White House. Now the press is willing to admit the economy hasn't been any good since 2022, despite the AI bubble. And this is just another sign of that. See also earlier comments about how Klarna has a rapidly closing window to get that IPO done. If poor people can't afford to eat at McDonald's, then they can't afford to make their buy now, pay later loans that they borrowed with Klarna. And I just want to say thank you very much to Charger Mopar. Mr. Rick, what's going on, Rick? He says property taxes mean you will never own a home. There is a legitimate philosophical argument to be made for the fact that you never really own your home. As long as you need to continue paying property taxes, otherwise known as rent, to the government in perpetuity, is it ever really yours? And if you think so, stop paying those property taxes and see what happens. And here's a sneak peek. You will no longer own it. They'll take it from you. So did you ever own it? That's a legitimate question, Rick. By the way, shout out to my buddy Travis and Mitch over at Real Estate Mindset, who are doing everything in their power to fight those ever-increasing property taxes and all the shenanigans going on in local governments and the assessor's offices that are giving themselves a raise at our expense, even as our cost of living continues to rise. Thank you, Rick, for supporting the channel, sir. Steve Woitis says 10-year and 30-year up with Fed rate cuts, bond market betting on inflation, and hence higher future rates. Steve, that is exactly what is happening. People think 30 years from now, their money is going to be worth less than it is now, and therefore they need a bigger interest rate in order to justify locking up that money for 30 years. And so they're not loaning the money to the government until that interest rate goes higher. Now, we've taken that whole dynamic and the media has created this term bond vigilantes as if like Jack is in his crime fighting van wearing a mask in the middle of the night. There's all kind of like fancy computers and guns and stuff in the background. And I'm out fighting the bond market. I'm a bond vigilante at night. No, I'm just not loaning my money to the government because it's not worth it to. That's the bond vigilantes. And the bond vigilantes are in charge right now. That's why we're seeing interest rates rise and gold is rising with it. Now, historically, higher interest rates has been bad for gold because gold competes with bonds for yield. Gold yields nothing, or gold competes with bonds for investors' capital. But the fact that gold is rising even as interest rates are rising, that tells me those interest rates are going to keep rising because they're not yet high enough to attract the money that's flowing into gold. Thank you, Steve. Good question, sir. Appreciate the super chat and the support of the channel. And thank you, Kingfisher, for being a Melonhead member for 4 months. He says, hello from the UK. We need Trump over here badly. I'm going to be honest with you, Kingfisher. Honest, I think what we all need is my man Javi down there in Argentina. I think we all need a Malay. All right. There are some things Trump is doing that I like. There are plenty of things I see Trump doing that I don't like. Trump is not shutting off the easy money tap. Trump is trying to just take that tap, and just break it off with a sledgehammer so that the easy money comes blowing out of the barrel and can never be stopped. That's what Trump is doing. And, you know, during the election season, I was kind of saying over and over again how I didn't think it mattered. You know, like it's going to smell different, but the end result will be the same. And I said, Donald's going to print, Kamala's going to print. And right now it looks like Donald is going to print. So I would amend it slightly, and I would say we all need Malay. Malay has proven that you can get government spending under control, and it's not dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. That is what we need. Viva Libertad, carajo. And no, everything has not been perfect in Argentina. There is pain associated with ending decades of easy money. All right, not saying it's going to be painless. It's going to suck. But you know what? Quitting a drug habit tends to be painful. And easy money is absolutely an economic narcotic. Thank you, Kingfisher, for supporting the channel. And Chris Bott says, can I get a degree in accounting fraud? Seems like a growth industry. You know, I mentioned this on my Twitter feed the other day. Fraud trades at a premium in this market. Case in point, Supermicro Computer was in the news Friday afternoon because they released their annual statement and they still have flagged major issues with accounting controls, or what was it? Internal controls over financial reporting. In other words, they're still doing accounting fraud at Supermicro, and they can't guarantee that their auditor isn't going to like flag all these issues. And for some reason, BDO continues to sign off on these documents. Apparently, it's Supermicro's plan to just leave that big accounting red flag on their annual report in perpetuity, and their auditor is going to sign off on it, even though they've done nothing to resolve it. How do you justify that? And yet Supermicro is still trading higher than they were a year ago, when the first accounting fraud was exposed. So, hey, man, you're right. Fraud is a growth industry. I mean, you got a lot of opportunity in fraud. Have you considered fraud? Have you considered a career in fraud? Does Phoenix Online offer a degree in fraud? And guys, I'm kidding, by the way. I mean, this isn't like, it's not an idea for you to go execute on. But you're right. It is the golden age of fraud, the golden age of grift. And fraud is rewarded, unfortunately. This market does not punish fraud. And as long as the market doesn't punish fraud, fraud will thrive, capital will be misallocated and ultimately destroyed, and investors, typically everyday people, are the last to find out about these things. They will be the ones who pay the price, while all the financiers who are telling you, oh, it's all so great and, you know, AI is going to take over the world and it's going to be so awesome, they're making their money, all right? They'll get paid first. It's you who is going to lose all the money for listening to them. May the odds be ever in your favor. Thank you, Chris Bott, for supporting the channel, sir. I appreciate the super chat. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out for you new guys. Come on back tomorrow. Thank you so much, everybody, for the super chats, as well as you magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube and Patreon. Thank you guys for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small, dream big.